Hello, you're listening to a spoiler-filled film conversation. Hooray!
Big trouble.
In Little China!
Is there a theme music?
Yeah! Over
Yeah!
the credits!
Is there?
Yeah!
Like,
I
there's
don't
a
remember.
song, and it's performed by John Carpenter.
With the worst music video of all time.
I didn't realize there was a video.
No, yes.
Oh
But
my
it's
God.
just basically them in a room recording it with bits of the film badly special
Spliced in.
affected on
He does it. He does
onto
it.
like TVs and stuff in the room.
Ah.
Okay. He
I
does
mean,
it live with his son and his band.
fuck it, do it live. Oh, imagine being in a band with your dad.
Yeah, but if your dad's John Carpenter, it's kind of different.
No, but it's your dad. It's not like, you know, it's not like.
Yeah, that's true. I always wonder with like celebrity kids whose parents were famous before they were born, is it still like are their parents still lame even if they're like icons of a particular like industry,
I
like John
also,
Carpenter?
yeah.
I
Think about,
saw
think
Robert
about.
Downey.
Go on.
I saw Robert Downey Jr. with his son. His son is a musician, and Robert Downey Jr. was doing this video where he was basically doing a vlog, and he let his he went to his son so his son could say hello and say something on his vlog, and his son just corpsed completely, and he looked crippled with embarrassment at his
Yeah,
dad, who is Robert Downey Jr.
isn't his
it's
dad
there
a
was
director as well? Robert Downey Jr.'s dad, I mean, not. I know
yes
you're
yes
talking about his son. I'd
Robert
love to
Downey
see. I'd
Jr.
love to see the senior come in and be like, "What you doing?" I don't know why he talks like that. What's this? Oh, back in my day, I don't know. He's Welsh now. Oh, back in my day, used to have a static camera.
I listened to one of those Marc Maron WTF
Podcasts, yeah.
episodes. He did. He interviewed James Hetfield last week, and
Why? Metal.
he talked about how lame his teenage kids think he is.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they
It's
are
like,
lame.
oh. Oh, yeah.
They do make dad rock, though, in fairness.
Oh yeah, I love that dad metal.
They're no Skrillex,
No, good.
are they? Right, the podcast. We started recording it, and then we ditched talking about it. Right, so. Dude, I fell asleep during this film because it was so dull. Like, I don't. I watched it again. Like, when I woke up, I did watch the end of it. I went back and I didn't, you know, skip stuff. I'm sure this will come up in the proper podcast. But
You're a proper podcaster.
you're lucky I can remember anything. It's so rubbish. Right. Hello, I'm Richard Nicholas, and with me to make spoiler filled is Anthony.
Hello.
Abby.
Hello.
And Jamie.
Hello.
So, this week, guys, we've got the cult classic Big Trouble in Little China.
Big
In my.
trouble
Yes.
in Little China.
Rich, did you know it has a theme?
No.
Plays over the credits.
We covered this at the pre-podcast. I said I didn't remember a theme. I barely remember any of it because it is terrible and I don't like it.
Oh, God.
How can you like No Retreat, No Surrender and then not like this?
No Retreat, No Surrender is trying to be a brilliant action movie. This is trying to be silly nonsense.
This is trying to be a satire
Of.
America and how America views itself in relation to other races in general, specifically Chinese.
Right. And that's meant to be
See,
funny because.
we've got two opposite ends of the spectrum here.
Well,
Because
it
I think,
legitimately is a cult classic, but it was also
yeah.
panned by many critics.
Well, I think Rich is not giving it enough credit, and Abby's giving it too much
Well, look. Jamie, let's do the formal thing and you give the actual credits so people don't get it confused with other big troubles in little places.
A nice lead in.
Yep, so there we go.
Big Trouble in Little China is from 1986, directed by John Carpenter. I don't know how to. Yeah, I can't add anything to this synopsis. An all-American trucker gets dragged into a centuries-old mystical battle in Chinatown, San Francisco Chinatown. It stars Kurt Russell, Kim Cattrall, Dennis Dunn, James Hong, Victor Wong. That's your main cast. There's a lot of people in it, but a lot of them don't have much to do other than shout and run around.
Yeah, it's true. There's a lot of the... basically all the Asian-American actors are in it. Like, just all of them dumped in there.
Probably, yeah. It's probably the main, like, most of the stable from the 80s and possibly 70s. Mm.
Good jobs they do as Asian types. But, okay, let's talk expectations before we get into what we thought. I'll go first. I expected it to be a steaming bowl of shit that I'd have to lap up and put up with and somehow stomach to talk about in the podcast. That's because I'd seen it before, probably about 10 years ago. I heard it was a cult classic, and I thought, oh, go on then. And I put it on, and I hated it because it was so stupid and random. And this time, I was like, maybe it'll be better. Maybe I'm just, you know, being cynical. Jamie, why did you put it forward? Are you of the same opinion? Let's give everyone a big bowl of shit.
I knew you would hate it, and that was part of why I picked it.
Thanks, buddy.
But also, I've seen it a few times, and the first time I ever saw it was I was a kid.
Classic.
Like, I must have been. That's probably part of why I like it, because it's. I would almost say it's more. It's bordering on being a kid's film anyway.
Yes.
And it was really late at night. My family and I had been out, and then we came home, and I have a really vivid memory of eating chips from a takeaway, really salty chips from a takeaway, and this being on TV at midnight, and I already caught it when it was starting to go mental with Lopan and lights coming out of his face.
Right.
So I was enthralled and in that mindset of, what is this? I'm a child and I've never seen anything like this. And then I grew up and watched it and I went, what is this? I'm an adult. I've never seen anything like this. Like, it's such, like, I don't know. It's always been, it was an anomaly that I remembered. And then I watched it again. And even though I saw it and I watched it with the commentary with Kurt Russell and John Carpenter, I still don't quite know what the purpose of the film is, and that's kind of why I like it.
So you picked it because you associate it with really salty chips.
Yeah.
Which is potato fries, if you... Not crisps, as we call them. Chips. I don't know if we need to clarify for our international listeners, but he does mean chip shop chips from Britain, not crisps.
I think when you say chips in any sort of British accent, people immediately assume, whoa, fish and chips. So.
Yeah, good. Just wanted to clarify. I don't know why. It doesn't matter. It's only Jamie's memory, not anyone else's. Anthony, did you used to eat salty chips while watching this film?
Maybe I did, because my story is kind of similar to Jamie's. Like, I can remember watching this. Like, it's always been on TV, like, late night, and you always catch, like, half an hour here, half an hour there. I don't think I ever really saw it properly once all the way through, but like all the bits are kind of so memorable in themselves. You don't really need like the through line to remember
a lot of it. Doesn't help the narrative to have it in order anyway, I don't think. It's just...
I just realized now you're right in that it is one of those films when it was on TV a lot in throughout the 90s. It was always on really late, as if it was a really violent or exploitative film.
Yeah.
So whenever
it kind of exploits Asian people.
Yeah, it is, I guess. But I mean, when I sat down and watched it, I was expecting something darker and more violent, yeah. And instead, I was like, no, it's just kind of racist, but also not necessarily maliciously racist. Like, it just plays up the whole. I think the idea was John Carpenter wanted to make his own sort of kung fu martial arts movie.
It's kind of Breakfast at Tiffany's racist at times.
Well, no, because it doesn't have any white people dressed up as Asian stereotypes, does it?
Yeah, but it has stereotypes.
That. No, it's
all... Okay, it's not that bad. Okay, good. Just
yeah. Fucking hell.
Anyway, Anthony. Right. Anthony,
yeah. But I know what Jamie means, because it was always on late at night, so it always seemed cooler than it was. And I was coming into this time thinking it would be a bit more, I don't want to say gritty, but a little bit less goofy than it turned out to be.
Yeah, it's just a cartoon, basically.
Yeah.
Okay. What about you, Abby? Have you seen this before? Has everyone watched this as a child? Or
I have seen it before. And to find camaraderie with Jamie slightly, me and my mum had this thing about when we were watching films of an evening, we generally ate salted peanuts. So I associate this film vaguely with salted peanuts.
Something very salty about this film, apparently.
It makes me very salty to have to talk about it. Okay, so everyone had seen it before, but that didn't stop us telling Jamie no thanks. We were like, sure, let's do it for the podcast. Do I just start wailing on it with my gripes, or do I just it up as the story?
Just from picking pieces of trivia off the internet and IMDb about it, there's a quote from the commentary, or it's not a quote, but there's something from the commentary that I remember as well when I watched it about, and it sort of sums up the mentality behind the film, where Kurt Russell said that he was hesitant to star in it because at that point he'd had a series of flops at the box office. And John Carpenter basically said, who gives a shit? Come on. And that was it. So, and this is, like, I really like John Carpenter, even though I don't necessarily love all of his films. Yeah. The ones I do like, I really like, which includes this one. I would say this one, The Thing, and Prince of Darkness, which is another really, really weird one, kind of like this, but much darker. But it's hard to really put it anywhere. Like he did, and what I like about him, even with his misses as well as his hits, is he just doesn't give a shit. He's very much always made films that he's wanted to make, and he's carved out in his film career as a director his own little niche of, like, he almost has his own genre of films, because they're all these, like, mixed up combinations of different ideas and different genres and cliches a lot of the time, very deliberately, and he just sort of makes his own thing. And now he's sort of unofficially retired and just makes music and actually releases albums now, and his philosophy on that seems to be, yeah, I'll do it until I get bored,
fuck it, that's I'll do what I want. Yeah
And I just kind of admire that. And if you listen to, like, you know, if you do have DVDs or Blu-rays or whatever of his films, especially the ones he did with Kurt Russell, their commentaries are always really entertaining because it's just the two of them in a booth dicking around. Mm-hmm. And that seems to have been a lot of their careers together as actor and director. And I think that informs a lot of how I feel about this film, because it kind of puts me in that mindset of they're just messing about and having fun. And yeah. Rich doesn't like to have fun.
I like fun. Okay, here's where I stand. Escape from New York, I quite like. That's a bit wacky, but fundamentally quite a good Kurt Russell, John Carpenter film. Escape from LA crosses the line into really stupid. Not quite as much as this one. It's really wacky, and I kind of get the joke in that one. But I like stuff like They Live, which is a more kind of comedy action movie. But I also like The Thing and stuff. I think John Carpenter can do tension and horror very well. I mean, Precinct 13 is rather good. But, you know, like, he has hits and misses in his catalogue.
There's an association with him that he's a cult director, but he has made some of the most influential films, like, that have been made. Like, Halloween, which almost kickstarted a genre in itself.
But he's heavily influential on, like, creepy body monsters as well.
And also, stuff. Even things like Escape from New York and Assault on Precinct 13 have a lot of influence even now in, like, not just in movies either, but in video games and stuff like that. There's a lot of...
Yeah, of course.
And Kurt Russell's character in Escape from New York was part of the inspiration for, like, the characters of Snake in the Metal Gear Solid games. For whatever reason, there's a perception that he is not a lesser director or underground, but he directs cult films, but he's had that huge influence that carries on through movies, video games, even music now as well. Like, there's a lot of artists that have emerged in the last few years who have hooked it. Like, I think the reason he started releasing music as just music is because that sort of 70s and 80s downplayed synth thing that he did a lot in his films has caught on with a lot of artists who are the right age now to look back on that nostalgically.
Hmm.
And also, like, Dread, which we've loved and filleted on the podcast, was almost... It was borderline a John Carpenter film, stylistically and, like, soundtrack-wise. It was very, very much in the same sort of wheelhouse as a lot of his films from the 70s and the 80s. It felt very much like them.
Look, I agree with you. I don't have any qualms about John Carpenter. His music's good. I don't. It's not a John Carpenter thing. There's two films of his I'm like, and it's this and Escape from LA. Those I don't like very much. I haven't seen all of his films. That's all. I don't care for this.
Yeah, made shit. I mean, he made Ghosts of Mars.
I haven't seen it.
Yeah, Escape from LA.
So this is the thing. It's you know, John Carpenter is a good director. He's very influential and likable. Everyone would agree with that, right?
Yeah, we did also have like a verbal fist fight over In the Mouth of Madness as well.
Oh yeah, but no one's saying that. See, this film, Big Trouble in Little China, is a cult classic because there's a large small group of people who love it and think it's brilliant and a wonderful kind of B movie. It's kind of celebrated as this humorous classic, and I don't even think it succeeds at that. I think it's just tedious and half-assed a lot of the time. All right, that's where I'd stand on it. I think it's generally a bit confusing, and it's basically like, it's just like there's a guy who talks like John Wayne who's apparently a trucker, and his Asian like restaurant owning friend. And they move from room to room with a load of people fighting people in different rooms, whether it's up, down, left, or right. They just move from one room to another and then fight weird other realm demons and stuff. It's really weird and has no point.
Okay.
Good. I'm glad you agree.
I was going to say, first, like, I do agree with you in that it is kind of confusing, and a lot of the dialogue is people explaining things very quickly and then just moving on, and there is part of a, if you're not into it from the start, there's no real point where it's going to grab you.
Well, I fell asleep during the middle. I woke up and continued watching it from where I left off, but it was so boring I fell asleep. So
but the part of that disorientation is the idea that Kurt Russell's character is presented as the hero. And then you kind of realise he's not, and he's just there while
be boring.
The hero does stuff. He's not boring, though. It's Kurt Russell and his massive face and his jeans.
He's got a cool vest. And his tank top. He's got a cool tank top with a cool graphic on, which is somehow related to the evil villain they take on for some reason.
I never thought of that. Part of why I like this film is... mainly the three characters: Egg Shen, the old Chinese mystic, Lo Pan, the villain, and Kurt Russell's character Jack Burton. And I think Kurt Russell has a very good comic sensibility of playing it straight, making an idiot of himself, and not really drawing attention to it.
Right. Well, he certainly comes across like an idiot. I didn't think he was that satirical. But okay, let's see. Okay, Anthony, say what. Where do you land on this? I've already been vocal, but I'm curious where you lie.
I do enjoy the film. I can see that there are certain flaws. Like, I kind of enjoyed it because it was so B-movie-esque. But, you know, I can imagine a lot of people finding that just a bit hard to tolerate. But I think Jamie said it like best earlier on. This is essentially like a kid's film.
Mm.
And... like, even though I think it's rated a 15, and there are some, like disgusting images in there, but nothing too, like, graphic or anything like that.
It got the old guy who's kind of freaky, and then the big ball of human bits, and there's a big eye. And then they got that scary-looking orangutan Sasquatch. Don't know what. There's not even a reason for those things. I mean, one's a security camera.
Yeah.
The other one's a henchman that could appear right at the end to set up a sequel that thankfully isn't going to happen.
I will, I think, and I might be misremembering this, but I think there is a comic book follow-up.
There is.
That, and am I, did I read wrong about how that monster almost becomes Jack Burton's Chewbacca?
I didn't read that far.
Okay.
What do you know about it, Abby? How, and also,
I might be wrong. He might kill it. I don't know.
How do you feel about whether it's like for children or not? And I like children's films, so it's not really a good excuse.
I think it's that weird thing. That time period where there was stuff that was technically for children, but then had weird stuff in it. Like, take Labyrinth, for example. That's got weird shit in it. It's for kids. But then there's that really dodgy relationship between the Goblin King and the girl whose name I can't remember. That is really like, for adults, that's like, this is weird and wrong.
We could say that about David Bowie being a goblin.
I was going to say, actually, you can say that about David Bowie. Like, I don't think there was any way to stem his sexual charisma ever.
So, Abby, are you saying it was just a weird time roll with it? Or, did you like this or not? Was it generally, you know, how did you feel?
Well, this is one of those movies that I academically like. If that makes any sense.
No.
Where, if you know right, the whole thing about Jack Burton actually being like, I think the word is allegory for America and how it views itself against the rest of the world.
I would almost say satire.
Yeah, it's a satire. And for it to try and do that is endearing. And to an extent, it succeeds. But it just doesn't quite nail it. And that's a shame.
Why do you think it doesn't nail it?
I think with a good satire, the underlying sort of joke of it has to be good. And the underlying joke of this is good, but then it has to actually have like surface jokes as well to keep people entertained as it goes along as well.
As weird as it sounds about this film, in terms of some of the comedy, I do think it keeps some of the ideas behind it a little bit too close to the chest. Which sounds weird because it's such an over-the-top film, and usually if there is, you know, satirical elements tend to play better when they're more subtle, but the rest of the film is so over-the-top that that idea of Jack Burton is almost too subtle for the rest of the film.
So it can't compete.
Unless you're looking for it, you don't quite realise what his character is and is doing, so he just seems like a bit of a dickhead.
It doesn't feel like it's a biting satire, it just feels like a derpy kind of comedy action movie. I think there are times where the general sprinkling of jokes are quite good. Like, there's stuff where he's kissed one of the girls and he's got lipstick and he's confronting the baddie. Stuff like that's quite funny. It has its little moments that did kind of make me laugh and not want to fall asleep again. But it wasn't it wasn't enough clever satire about the American dream and the personification of the American hero. And it wasn't clever enough all the way through. And it was quite hard to follow because it's just, there's two clans, there's one guy literally trapped in the middle with his friend, and they're going to just fight in rooms and try and escape. They're either trying to escape or trying to break in. And it's all tied together. The start is just like, okay, we're having a bet, and I've won the game, and now you're going to try. Like, Wang is betting double or nothing. He can chop a glass bottle in half, and then the guy's like, yes, I take the bet, but this bottle, I don't know what trick he was going to do to actually chop a bottle in half. But because he owes him money, because he fails, they go somewhere, and then they try and drive in a truck, and they get surrounded by different fighting clans, and then that's it. You're in. It doesn't. Why is any of it happening?
Why not?
Oh, yeah, why not?
Yeah, sure. Okay.
But, that's the thing about... Go on.
It's a war movie, because in a war movie, it's the war happens around you. You don't happen to the war.
Yeah, but you sign up to it. It's happening. So, you know. surely. Not necessarily.
What if
you could have a war? Sure, wars happen. It's not a war movie, though. It's a wacky martial arts movie.
Well, there is a war going on in it. For centuries. Right.
It's a very slapsticky... action-packed, but I don't know that it's all that engaging either.
It is. Well, like I said, it's hard. Like, it's not made for... And like that quote from the commentary on the DVD, like, the fact that Kurt Russell was hesitant because he'd already had box office flops and John Carpenter said, who gives a shit, come on. It's not made for anyone other than Ricky themselves.
Why did they make such a stupid film that sucks there? If I wanted to make a film for myself, I'd make it good for me. Surely.
What am I missing here? It's John Carpenter isn't setting out to necessarily not make good films, but like with a lot of his films, he has an idea that he wants to express or even try.
He wants to have a big neon skull room, and that's cool. We're all glad there's a big neon skull room, right?
Yes.
But purpose for it? Don't know. Why is neon combined with skulls? Why is there even a room? What's going on?
Did you forget when we're talking about giant neon skulls? This film was made in 1986.
And they had to have Chinese baddies come down an escalator for a marriage. There's no reason for it.
There are moments in the film where I do kind of tune out as well, like that ceremony scene where they do martial arts performatively. It is very much like Flash Gordon, which also presumably you hate.
I've slowly come round. I didn't love it the first time. I've come round to it over the years. I almost love it now.
This is when was Flash Gordon made? I was going to say this is the Flash Gordon of the 80s, but Flash Gordon may well have been
Flash Gordon is the Flash Gordon of the 80s.
Yeah,
but the comic book's one of the first sci-fi comics, like, I think.
Yeah, but I mean, Flash Gordon is. I'm surprised I didn't think of that before, but this is very much like more. It's like John Carpenter's Flash Gordon.
1980.
Ah.
Oh, there you go. But it's very... It's a similar thing of, like, an American guy being thrust into this strange... I'm not going to say alien world, because it's Chinese culture, and that would be really racist, but, like...
It's alien, and it's, like, fantasy and magic. And...
alien to him, and, yeah, it's got fantasy elements, and this guy is a regular trucker, and he's like, what?
He's an irregular trucker. He's a right dickhead. Well, not saying truckers can't be dickhead, but he's, like, a cartoon John Wayne character, isn't he?
Yeah, and the other thing, and this was originally supposed to be a Western, which would have been interesting as well. But,
hang on, Anthony, I feel like we're all getting away with our thoughts, but this tacky shit, this Flash Gordon comparison, do you enjoy that kind of thing? Is that something you were liking about it? How do you feel?
You know I love tacky shit, Rich.
Probably, yes.
But... This film's totally up my street. It's goofy, but then you kind of just enjoy some of the madness. It's like I just remember when like the floating eye thing just turned up, and it's like, what? Okay, we'll just go with it. And I don't know. There's something about the effect of like the blue lightning that people had in the 80s, which just looks cool.
When I was watching this in preparation for this, I did actually comment that, like, that's one of the few special effects in older films that even when it's dated, it still just looks so fucking cool. Wow. That whole, like, drawn in lightning, like the Force lightning in Star Wars, or
the quickening in Highlander.
They probably the only special effect in Highlander that still looks good. But no, it's just the coolest, and I do really like the fact that with the lightning, the character lightning, they went so over the top with just drawing lightning all over him every time he moves. Like, they got really carried away.
You could tell it was heavily influential on stuff like Mortal Kombat as well. I mean, obviously the three like weather-based fighters are kind of, they all have giant Raiden-style wicker hats, like massive, ridiculous-sized wicker.
I think we should
Chinese hats.
Like, what are everyone's thoughts on the characters of the Three Storms? Because they're probably the characters that have become the mascots for this film. Like, whenever people remember this film, the Three Storms tend to be, particularly Thunder.
Thunder in paradise.
Well,
they're ridiculous, Jimmy. That's what I think. And one of them has his head blow up in a rather ridiculous
manner. It's not just his head, it's his whole body.
It steams. But his head becomes bulbous and large. And why did his head blow up?
No, all of him did. He got so angry that he just filled with pressure because it's thunder. Like, that's how thunder is created. It's shifts in air pressure.
Oh, makes perfect sense.
Yeah, Rich. Yeah.
What were the other two
I will
powers
say
were what?
That, well,
sunshine and
thunder, rain and lightning. Right. But I'm pretty sure rain is
didn't rain at any point.
Is just some guy. Like, I didn't even realize he was called Rain until I looked up the cast list, because he never does anything with water that I remember.
See? This is the thing. I don't mind a bit of wacky nonsense, but I like reasons, motivations, character depth.
Hold on. There is one thing I remember about Rain, is he has really nice hair.
Oh, well.
Like, it's spectacular. Glossy. There is one point where he takes his hat off and, like, whips his luxurious ponytail around, and I was like,
L'Oreal.
I'm jealous, or you're if worth I fancy it. Him.
Okay. Did anyone else find any depth? Because I watched it, and I didn't find any depth at all. No character development. There's quite a lot of characters. They have Egg, like, from Karate Kid. He turns up. And
he's not from Karate Kid!
Isn't he the guy from the Karate Kid?
No!
Have I done
That's
it again?
Not Mr. Miyagi.
He's one of the few...
Yeah, you real bastard!
Oh, he's in Three Ninjas. I'm thinking he's in Three Ninjas, right?
Right.
I was thinking of Three Ninjas. I was,
he is
honestly.
In Three Ninjas.
That's a very similar to Karate Kid, and I've seen that more recently. That, Three Ninjas with Horse and Tum Tum and all that. I remember that one. He's basically Mr. Miyagi in Three Ninjas.
He's not.
Oh, he's just. In this, he's a magical bus driver.
Well,
and
first
he does
of all,
nothing.
Mr. Miyagi's Japanese.
He dumps. Oh, look, let's not get into this whole difference between Chinese and Japanese. I'm sorry, alright? I'm sorry. It's a genuine mistake.
Oh, God. Yeah, it's funny, though.
Look. The point is, Egg is a bus driver who knows magic and dumps the plot on everyone.
Just to clarify, Mr. Miyagi is Pat Morita, and this is Victor Wong.
Genuinely, because I'd watched Three Ninjas more recently, I thought the character was fundamentally the same character, so that's why I thought
it is kind of a similar character in it. You know, he's Asian, he's mystic.
He trains people. I mean, not in this. I mean, like, in this, he's just there to dump plot and be called Egg for lols.
But he's like with marbles.
Yeah. He does. He's very good marble throwing magic skills.
And video games. When they have that weird, like, almost video game fight with him and Lo Pan.
Yeah. I mean, it was only him and all. There's two women who have green eyes and they're therefore important to the slightly convoluted plans of the evil guy. I mean, the evil guy has some depth. He's been around a long time, is wrinkly and horrible, and can kind of look young, like, again, like Mortal Kombat's Shang Tsung. Like,
but also.
But where's the depth to these people?
Well. What was I going to say? I don't know. How could you not enjoy James Hong's performance as Lo Pan?
It was stupid.
I don't understand.
I mean,
This is like the Doctor Who thing, where there are things about this movie that you could say about other movies that you like, and for some reason you just don't like this one.
Well, I don't like looking at a wrinkly old man. He's wrinkly to the point of, he's meant to be wrinkly and ancient. And there's such long dialogues explaining nothing. And it's just looking at him going, oh. And then he looks a bit younger, but he still looks stupid and has slightly different ceremonial robes on. He's like Ming the Merciless, isn't he?
James Hong, except less racist, because it's not Max von Sydow.
Well, he's an alien. He's not from China.
Oh, whatever. I really like him as Lo Pan in this. I really like the performance he gives of, like, he's sinister, but he's also kind of dorky, and he giggles and squeals, and he's a bit like, ugh, what?
But his plan is, he needs a green-eyed woman because he needs to marry her and then kill her for the gods to... Like, what? He's got a curse? Like, what's the thing?
He needs to appease the demon that he basically sold his soul to.
Right.
To get his his physical mortality back. But he'll still have all the powers he got from the deal he made. And it's because he finds two girls with green eyes, he can kill one and keep the other one, which lucky wasn't him. A thing before.
But it's once he's in America, surely it should be a lot easier to find girls with green eyes.
That was a bit weird. Like, at first it was like, oh, you know, an Asian girl with green eyes, that's very rare. And then also Kim Cattrall. And I was like, well, there's a million women with green eyes.
But he doesn't know that because he's from China.
Are you saying Chinese people are ignorant to eye colours of the rest of the world? I mean, careful where you tread. I'm already on terrible territory.
But I'm just saying that his facts aren't up to date, is all I'm saying.
He's older than a touch.
he's got this idea stuck in his head that he has to pick someone Chinese because he is Chinese, the curse is Chinese, all of it's Chinese. And then he suddenly has this moment of clarity of, no, it doesn't say anything in the curse that just be Chinese. Oh, yeah. I use this girl.
This bonus.
It's that narrow focus almost was his undoing, and then differently was his undoing.
I'll say one thing. Kim Cattrall, when she's in her weird wedding ceremony clothes, she does look great with like the extra makeup and weird headdress and things.
Yeah, I haven't actually seen her in much.
Sex in the City, surely. Surely
well, yeah,
everyone
that's what
watches
I mean,
Sex
outside
in the City.
Of that, but she was good in this. She's good at like
she played her role. She at least had like she was a stronger female character. Like the Asian green-eyed lady was under a trance and didn't do anything, whereas she was semi-faking it occasionally and trying to be more proactive.
I will agree with you about Wang's wife-to-be that he brings over from China. They don't give her anything.
No.
Like, wasn't she a model as well, so that she didn't have a lot of acting experience?
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
But
I mean,
she doesn't have much to do because she's in a trance all the time. But then Wang, what's his character? He is a liar because he's, you know, he tries to finagle out of paying the guy. But like he's just the Asian sidekick. Who is Wang? What?
He's
give
not
me a
the
theme
sidekick.
For Wang.
He's the hero. Jack Burton's the sidekick. It's just that Jack Burton doesn't know he's the sidekick.
Yeah, but other than being Captain America, the trucker, like he doesn't, like there's no depth, and there's so many characters dumped in it. It's just like a massive room full of characters, but none of them mean anything. One has glossy hair. One is a
this is man. It's subjective cinema, Rich. This is all seen through Jack Burton's eyes, and this is the way he sees people.
Well, he's dense.
Yeah. Yes, he is. That's the point.
Right. Oh, I didn't understand the point was to make a boring action movie with dense characters as the protagonists where we can't care about them because they're stupid.
Well, Abby, as Abby was saying earlier, the whole thing is a kind of satire. And for me, when I was watching it at first, I had the same thing. I wasn't particularly getting into it. The acting was a bit over the top and some of the things going on were a bit boring. But as it went on, you started kind of realizing that they were all in on the joke anyway, and it's supposed to be kind of a bit
the
crappy.
Idea is they're all essentially cliches of American kind of westerns, because that's where the germ of the idea was, but also martial arts movies. Like it's full of martial arts movies cliches, and the stereotypical idea of Chinese mysticism, which it plays up and makes, that's the purpose of Egg Shen's character, is that he's this overt, kind of over-the-top mystic character.
Yeah, I get where all the character types are coming from, but I think the main thing is, I don't care, and it's not that exciting anyway. Like, most of the fight scenes are, occasionally when there's quite a lot of people fighting, fair play. But intensely well choreographed. It's not like a classic action movie. It's not attention to detail brilliant. It's just, wow, there's a lot of them fighting with different weapons. And then after that, after a few of those, you're like, oh, not again. Oh, this one has electric powers. But it's most of the bad the henchmen are quite underwhelming.
And it does. Like,
There's nothing to pay off the excitement for me. And then when I don't care about anyone because they don't do anything to make me motivated to give a shit, then I don't see how it's a successful film.
Fuck off. I was going to agree with you about some of the action. Like, the first fight in the alley when they stumble upon it in the truck, that's probably, thinking back on it, the only really memorable martial arts, like, choreographed action scene in the film. Like, that's the only one where there's some cool shit going on and there's some very skillful, you know, stunt martial arts happening. And also, it does have one of my favorite moments where the three storms turn up. And I think it's Rain reveals his weapon, and it's these two weird fork things that spin on his hands. And I don't know why, it's just the image of him really slowly raising his hands, and then they start spinning. It makes me laugh every time I watch it. But the rest of the action scenes, yeah, they are a bit kind of... There is one that I really don't like, and it's the fight. And it's a shame, because it should be a cool face-off, but it's the fight between Rain and Wang, where they're jumping past each other.
Yeah.
And I do.
Oh, yeah.
it's kind of funny the first time it happens, but it keeps doing it, and it becomes a really annoying, drawn out, not fight scene.
Sure,
I will agree with you on that one. But another one that I do like, but again, it takes away from the martial arts movie thing because it makes it too cartoony because it's a very slapsticky joke. Is the scene where Jack kills, almost by accident, Lo Pan with a knife throw, which I do like because it's funny and it's unexpected. But in the background, Wang and Thunder are fighting each other, and there are those shots of, like, Wang runs across and Thunder runs after him, and he's just kind of flailing his arms around. Mm. And it made me laugh, but it also kind of takes away from that martial arts movie thing because, like, it just is, it's a stupid joke and it's a little bit too stupid for that scene. But it's immediately followed up with Thunder exploding, which is great.
I think in a way, if it had been a little bit, if they toned down the violence a bit and made it so it could be properly a kids' film and like marketed as such, it would have, like, there's quite a few jokes in there that are funny and like there's a lot of funny moments where Jack is this kind of arrogant, cocksure guy who's just, every situation that's ridiculous, he just kind of takes it in and just is like, yeah, let's go. And he has those, like, what's his crap catchphrase? Like Jack always says,
yeah,
whatever. That, which is also the John Carpenter, like, philosophy. Yeah. Whatever.
But I think a lot of why you don't like it is a lot of the stuff that I just forgive because I have a nostalgic affection for it, is that it's a lot of ideas and a lot of them don't really get fully realized because most of the film seems to be John Carpenter and Kurt Russell having a laugh, but
having
not
a wacky
really
old time.
Yeah, but it's, and I almost feel like a hypocrite for liking it because it's obviously a deliberate B movie, and wasn't so much a thing then, whereas now you have almost a whole genre of films that are made on purpose to be so bad it's good, like fucking Sharknado or whatever, and I can't stand those films. I think they're like a pox on the film industry.
Well, like there's this thing that if we don't try very hard, that will in itself make a bad film that we can enjoy.
I don't think
John Carpenter is trying, because even like his characters have lines of dialogue, like when they rescue the green haired ladies, there's like a line where they ask what was happening, and she's like, "Oh, we were kidnapped because I think he wanted to marry us or something because we have green eyes." Also, like it's just. She literally says, or something, like she doesn't even know what's happening in the film, and she's a part of the kidnapping, and she just, it's like, that's how little a fuck they gave for the plot, is they haven't really got any reason for anything to happen. And I just feel like, because it doesn't care, why should I?
I also think, which is something I didn't really know about, is that there was a surprising amount of studio interference in this film, and it was the last film with the studio that John Carpenter made, because he was so frustrated by how much they were trying to interfere while he was making it.
Sure.
And, you know, I don't know, because I haven't read that much about it, but it could well be that there were certain directions he wanted to take it that he was told, no, don't. Because one of the things I do know is he was told that he needed to make Kurt Russell's character more of the hero.
Right, right.
Which, you know, for him would have been annoying. Yeah, he's not. So I don't know how much of it is studio interference that frustrated him to the point where he almost, like, he didn't put the effort in, necessarily, that he would normally have.
Okay. Do other people have moments or points about it? Because I've just been trying to say why I don't like it and why I think it sucks. But are there other interesting observations or parts of the film people would like to talk about? Because I don't want it to be just about whether it's good or bad. So, Anthony, Abby, any thoughts?
Well, it's weird that you both, you and Jamie, brought up how much you like Kim Cattrall in this, because I thought she was quite bad.
I thought she was attractive, and I didn't think she did a bad job of playing a kind of damsel in distress character.
I think she's, to me, she's one of those kind of like really overrated actors of the 80s.
Clearly you haven't seen Mannequin.
Like she got better. Like, you know, by the time she got to like Sex and the City, she found her like
she could play a slut.
Yeah, but like back in the '80s, she was terrible.
She was in Mannequin. Like, yes, Mannequin is awful.
But like everything in the '80s, like Kim Cattrall is just bad, and in this as well. I after a while, I stopped noticing his kind of like impression of John Wayne all the way through.
Right.
But, like, I was just really always kind of aware of her kind of weird sort of Marilyn Monroe kind of impression she was doing all the way through. I don't know. It was weird.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, yeah.
Plus then the kind of jokes they make. They have the weird thing where they're like, oh, here's the hero-ish character, here's the woman, they're going to get together. And it's kind of weird how they played off those moments.
Yeah.
So, like, by the end, when it's like, you're not going to kiss goodbye, no, it's like, I don't really know how to feel about this. Yeah. It's like, I don't really care.
I think for me, it was her character was better than the other, like, damsel in distress. Like, she had a character. It was comparatively better. Not that it was an amazing performance. I think that's where I was coming from.
Fair enough.
So it wasn't, not to take back any praise I accidentally gave. But I think it was just, it's better to have a proactive female character than a vacant one.
I know what Anthony means, but because for the majority of, let's say cinema in general, parts for women were basically nothing.
Mm.
I think Kim Cattrall is actually one of the better actresses of her period, but she... No, but it's because all of the parts were terrible.
There are lots of terrible parts.
She has,
at least in going on this film, she has, or was maybe allowed to have more presence, even though nothing necessarily happens of it. She comes across as a little bit...
She's not, like, frightened of it or anything.
She's not a shrinking violet damsel in distress, story-wise she is. She doesn't come across that way.
And her, like, if Anthony, you said she's a bit like Marilyn Monroe impression. I think it's because they're all doing slight impressions of characters. You kind of, she fits in that world, so I wouldn't necessarily have a go at her more than I'd have a go at everyone for doing a terrible hammy job of it. I don't disagree with you. Like, I probably we give her too much credit, but. It is just a silly pantomime at times, and that element I understand is just like many pantomimes, it's a bit dull.
Okay, W.D. Richter, who worked on this film, I think was one of the writers.
Mm-hmm.
yeah, things are starting to piece together now. Also, was one of the people behind Buckaroo Banzai.
Another film, yes. I am not a fan of.
I can imagine. And funnily enough, this film was apparently... he was a producer on Buckaroo Banzai. He didn't write it. But this was, at one point, supposed to be a sequel to Buckaroo Banzai.
Well, it is random. That doesn't make any sense.
Sorry. He directed Buckaroo Banzai, which I should have known since we've done it a long time ago.
I could see how this is the same universe.
Yeah.
Not
and I can also, like... Yeah, I was going to say, and now I kind of understand why Rich hates it so much.
I like things to have sense and logic, even if it's their own weird universe.
It definitely has that kind of, what the fuck is this feel that Buckaroo Banzai has. It's a little bit more universal and appealing than Buckaroo Banzai is. But it's definitely niche and of its era. And it's almost like, I feel like this is one of those films that you have to go into wanting to enjoy it.
Yes, and... that probably helps. And I definitely wasn't. I knew it was... I thought, this is crap, but I might have misremembered.
Yeah, and I think going in... Either going... Like, it's easy to go in wanting to hate it and hate it.
Yeah.
But it's also easy to go in not knowing what it is and thinking, well, that was a bit shit.
Well, like, this is... So, Mortal Kombat, obviously, was influenced... The video games were influenced by this film. And then later on, the movie Mortal Kombat came out, which I quite like, because I like the source material. I like the video game.
Yeah.
I like the... But, like, Mortal Kombat's a low-quality film, but I quite like it. And I think it has a lot of the things that Big Trouble in Little China has. It's just, I find myself caring, maybe because I'm invested from playing the video games in the characters... So I'm willing to give it more time of day.
Kind
and the tone is slightly less wacky in Mortal Kombat.
Nothing, unrelated to this, but I know, you know, Super Mario Brothers is kind of notorious amongst us because of me. But I will say that Mortal Kombat is probably the closest there's ever been to a good film based on video games. And don't get me wrong. It's a shit film.
Yeah.
But it is actually entertaining. I don't know if there are any other video game films that are entertaining
Tomb Raider is one of the better normal... It's like it's a very normal blockbuster.
Yeah, kind of.
It's just one of the more vanilla... You can't say it's... Like, video game movies are usually terrible.
Yeah. Have I got you guys to do Street Fighter yet?
No, we haven't done Street Fighter yet. That's quite fun. Anyway, that's quite fun.
Kind of. I mean, it's Raul Julia seems like he's the only one who genuinely gets what that film is.
He's the best.
But anyway, yeah. Before we get off track,
that's true.
No, like it is. Yeah, it's easy to, and I think this is almost a film now. For, like, mostly film nerds who tend to be more forgiving based on the intent of the film rather than the actual outcome, and also who's involved. Like,
and I think a big factor here is, right, you three had all watched it as children, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
And I hadn't. I watched it, like maybe 10 years ago because I had heard about it. So it isn't tinged with nostalgia of childhood memories of weird nights watching TV, you know?
Mm.
No, I think it has more to do with the horror sensibility, which you don't have. You're not willing to look at things that are ugly.
I like The Thing. That's a cracking film. It's full of like good storytelling, tension, and, you know, interesting characters. And a good conceit. The conceit of this is, there's a man, there's two warring clans, kidnap a woman.
Do you know what this film is like? And I guess I'm doing my metaphor now, even though I had one in mind, but this one's probably better. It's like when it's like hearing good friends reminisce about a drunk night out that you weren't on.
Sure.
Because they all did stupid stuff and got hammered and like made idiots of themselves. And like they're telling the story and you're there, but you weren't there at the time. And you're just kind of thinking, oh, you guys made idiots of yourselves. That doesn't sound fun at all.
And then you're like, oh, he tried to chop the bottle in half and he like caught it.
Yeah,
in
yeah. Like,
sounds shit. Like, yeah. Sounds really dumb.
Why did you do that? That's
why was
stupid.
That funny? Like,
it's okay, kind
yeah,
of,
I get you.
Yeah.
You had to be there.
Yeah, kind of. And also, like, and yeah, it's because it's one thing to like it. It's one thing to be in on that joke that Kurt Russell and John Carpenter seem to be sharing with each other. It's almost like I like it because I watched it with the commentary on and felt like I wanted to be in the room having a laugh with them. Like,
yeah, I want that but too, but I didn't like their joke.
But definitely, I would almost say this is a better kids film than it is. And yeah. You know, take out a couple of instances of the more, because there isn't much real violence in it.
It could almost be a Jackie Chan adventure cartoon. Like, it feels like a blow-off movie to one of those. You're quite a fan of Jackie Chan adventures.
How
I am. Does this could this be a kind of Jackie Chan style thing if they tampered with it a bit?
Oh yeah, definitely. All of the elements are there. It's just it didn't quite line them up properly. In my opinion,
I think it is a better kids film than it is a film for an adult audience. Hmm. As long as you tell those kids going in, okay, this isn't what Chinese people are like. Just
they are secretly they are.
Please don't assume these things of any Chinese friends you might make, because it's a hard one to like determine in terms of like Rick, because it's not. I wouldn't say it's.
Ooh,
bloody hell! I wouldn't say it's racist because I don't think there's any malice behind it, but I can definitely see somebody watching it, maybe even in passing, and just being like, "Oh, this seems a bit fucking weird. What is this?"
You could presume it because it's like white people making a martial arts Chinese film, but yeah, it's not like I don't think it crosses into racism.
Well, I think it's just doing
a genre, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, and I almost think that is part of the joke: is white people making a martial arts film, and that's why Jack Burton is there as the person he is.
Well, that could be true
because he's like, I don't know what I'm doing,
So, Jamie, you came up with a metaphor. Well done. Pass it on.
May I have one?
But, I think the one I just did is better.
Good. Okay. Abby.
It's a bit like Jamie's, but because he's onto the right sort of theme. But I think it's more like when you try and explain why a video game is good to someone.
Mm.
But it's not actually giving you much to go. So, for example, Hitman, but other games are like this too. If you basically say, well, yeah, I kind of like kill people and hide them in cupboards and bins.
Yeah. Do you know what? You're right, and I've got an even more apt one in terms of video games. It's like trying to explain to someone why you think video games are brilliant, but you're trying to use the Metal Gear Solid series as your example. Because you're like, yeah, no, it is. It's brilliant and self-referential, but it's also full of characters shitting themselves and hiding in boxes. And I don't know how to use this as a good example of what I spend so much of my time doing. Look, Solid Snake looks a bit like Kurt Russell. It's like you see the artistic merit in it, but when you actually try and express it to someone, you're suddenly very embarrassed and ashamed.
Yes.
So is you concurring with Jamie that it's that kind of trying to explain why video games are good without being able to show them how it plays, you know?
Any video game.
So to explain Big Trouble in Little China, which is what we've done, is to fail at showing people why it's good.
Basically, this entire entry is
as pointless as the film was. Yeah,
yeah, it's a really good film. Why? I don't know.
Just have to watch it and experience it.
I like Kurt Russell's big face.
He does have a big face. Anthony.
He has got a massive face.
Any other thoughts or just your rating? It's up to you.
I don't have a rating quite yet. Let's see if I can hash one out. But, yeah, I think the main thing I agree with, like, what you said is with Jamie, it's like, this could easily be, like, a 12. If this was a 12, say, instead of a 15, and they kept the kind of wackiness but kind of played down some of the more, like, violent sexual bits, then I reckon this could have been, like, a proper kind of kids kind of goofy classic of the 80s. And even though I enjoy the kind of odd dark streak that's going through it, and some of like the weird monsters and the weird mythology going on, like that weird bit where with the swords raising them up, that was a really odd bit. Anyway, but I did enjoy it because it's supposed to be like stupid and cheesy, and I kind of got it fairly early on, so I was kind of in on the joke, so it was fine and funny.
Yeah.
So I don't know how to work a metaphor quite around that.
Sorry. Tough. Try, mate. Just pick
you're
something
fired.
Vaguely Chinese.
Jamie had two. Oh, we just take the old standard of just like, what's the stereotypical Chinese thing it could be? Haven't we done that before? Like, that sounds familiar.
My original was going to be it's like a piece of cheap Chinese in inverted commas memorabilia that was made in like a casino in Vegas in their like gift shop.
Okay.
We'll say it's like a fortune cookie, which has nothing to do with China.
Oh, you bastard, shut up. That was going to be mine. I sat here wondering what to say.
Yeah, there's a little American flag in it.
I was going to say, it's like a fortune cookie. It's a horrible, rancid thing to taste. And you smash it open. But instead of getting, like, a piece of bullshit, you actually get, like, a cracker joke.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh, yeah. Don't.
You're like joking on the back of a penguin.
But it's lost in translation, and I'm just like, oh, this is. I wish I hadn't had a fortune cookie. I want a prawn crackers with my Chinese meal, thanks. Yeah. So that was mine.
It tastes rancid.
It's got a stupid joke in it.
They are gross.
They are. I don't think you're meant to. And they got that thing, like Abby was saying, it's an American-made thing that's meant to be a Chinese traditional thing that dates way back. But it's fake and tacky and just doesn't work. So I think that's a good one.
I like that metaphor. That doesn't help. Fortune cookie with a cracker joke in it.
Yeah. That doesn't help Anthony out, who's still swimming for a metaphor.
Let him drown.
Do something or die.
Yeah, you both have been doing quite well. I mean, Jamie had two, even three. So.
Yeah, I know.
You could just say it's like a lemon cheesecake and use Abby's old standard.
Fuck you.
Everything we do is it.
Stop using that.
That is one that you can apply to basically any film. Ooh, it's not for everyone.
Yeah, lemon cheesecake. You either like cheesecake that's lemon or you don't.
I don't like cheesecake at all.
I didn't think I liked it because I just went lemon. Lemon I don't like. But it's cheesecake. It's kind of like Peter Kay. Cheese. Whatever. Cheesecake aside, has this stalled for time, Anthony? Have you been trying to think of something?
I can't, I'm sorry.
I've been trying to work around where it's something like... There's a film called One of Our Dinosaurs is Missing, and Peter Ustinov plays Chinese. But because when I was young, it was the only thing I'd ever seen him in. He didn't know he wasn't Chinese. And it was only when I saw him later on in something else, I'm like, what? But
he's the best voice as well.
Yeah. Same, but with Mickey Rooney in Breakfast.
Well, I think we've come up with enough metaphors between us, even if Anthony struggled a bit to outdo us.
Sorry,
that's all right, Mace.
Sorry.
You're not as sorry as Jamie's going to be for picking this shit. Genuinely. Hey, I wasn't even tired when I fell asleep.
Not as sorry as you're going to be for mixing up Pat Morita and...
Ah, you don't even know
the actor's name. Fuck.
They both play... They both typecast in the same, like, ethnic role that they get.
One's Chinese and one's Japanese.
Oh, like Hollywood gives a crap.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not my
that
racism.
Is very
I don't. I haven't watched like Karate Kid in years and years and years, and I have watched Three Ninjas more recently, and I don't care. So I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You're both unique, different actors, and also, I'm sorry that you confused me.
I just want to say, why are we watching Three Ninjas? Those films are shockingly bad.
Well, sub podcast on Three Ninjas. I had watched it as a child and forgot what happens. I remember the masks, and I knew it was a kind of Karate Kid ripoff, and I was like, oh, it was quite good when I was a kid. And then I watched it again, and I was like, this is genuinely terrible. It's kind of funny in the same way that, like, the Ninja Turtles is a bit funny. Like, that's not even doing it justice. Like, I don't know. I don't know why I watched Three Ninjas other than I'm dumb, and I was like, couldn't remember if it was good or bad. So, a mini Three Ninjas review. It is not worth... have happy thoughts of it. Don't watch it again, for God's sake.
Also, if we're... excuse me. Because it sounds like we're winding up on this. There's a rumoured, although it's been rumoured for a while now, remake of this, starring... Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Jack Burton.
I mean, it doesn't have any. That would suck even more, wouldn't it, really?
What? Hold on. Sound like you're saying it would suck because The Rock is in it.
The Rock is good, with a caveat, but not always. It depends what the project is. Like, he's a genuinely funny man and interesting person, but...
Yeah, he will also be in anything.
Oh, yeah.
And he will treat it like he is lucky to be in any films at all, even though he's in all films.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know.
I can't trust them to... they won't do the satire. They'll just do the cheesy jokes and possibly be racist.
That's what I'm thinking. Because I do think this is... one of those films, as much as I like it, I wouldn't mind seeing it get remade, because I think there are ways to do it better.
I'd get the guy who made The Raid to make it, and have some actually brutal, hard-hitting action in it. Like, stop it being a children's film, and make it a hard-hitting, you know, martial arts movie.
He did. He went to the University of Glamorgan in Cardiff.
And then pissed off to Indonesia to make badass movies. Good work. But yeah, I don't know. I can't say... Well, we don't know. Maybe it's out now and we should have... I don't know. I can't predict the future. Let's just say that this film is maybe funny if you have the right frame of mind. But if you don't,
if you are
give it a miss.
Mentally a child like I am, then it's a perfectly good film for you.
Yeah, that's right. So, last chance to say anything... quotable from the film, and then we'll say goodbye. Any hilarious lines?
No, Pork Chop Express.
Why is it called that? Is that like a euphemism for something? Like penis going fast? Why does he have a... Why is he a fucking trucker? There's no trucking. It's not like Convoy where they have a trucking scene.
It's because originally he was supposed to be chasing after his horse.
When it was a Western.
Chasing
after his horse, and then he just gets a reverse out of a building, and everyone goes, wah, 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 wah.
It was funny. Shut the fuck up.
I liked when Wang was, like, making out with his girlfriend really enthusiastically between them. That was kind of... There were funny bits. Fair play. So, we're going to say goodbye now, guys. Get ready. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Right, I need to go, because I do not feel well.
I like Rich's summing up of, there were funny bits, fair play. That's like the whole... You could have saved an hour and a half just by saying that.
Take care, sweetie.
Bye, Abby.
Bye-bye.
Get well soon.